And are you refreshed?
Yes. You bet.
Good. And now what is the topic?
Well, you kind of, you pulled a me on me. In other words, you talk about it as death as the topic, and that's just kind of an eye catcher, but the topic is really beliefs, choices and chances about our beings, our physical beings, as far as aging and deterioration. And, yeah, the perfect death experience at the end of that. But
you're very sly, for we were about to say, since death does not exist, what is next?
Some years ago, back in Spokane, Washington again, I was staying with some friends, and the fellow's mother worked in a nursing home. And every day she'd come in and visit, and she'd talk about how this lady had pushed the other lady's wheelchair over, and this one had dumped her porridge on the other one's head, and this one had stolen someone's silverware. And she just, this constant bickering and battling going on between these ladies at the nursing home. And one day I asked her, I said, about how many ladies are there in this nursing home? She said, about 100. I said, do you mean to tell me that out of 100 people, that not one of them have developed a philosophy of life, that they could reach this stage of their lives and be happy? I mean, you mean to tell me that every one of them are miserable? Nobody's found the way to happiness? She said, well, there are two of them that are happy. And I said, okay, what's their secret? She said, well, they have just been released to us from Medical Lake. That's that mental institution that I talked about. And it really shocked me that the only happy ones were the insane ones. And so if you'd take it from there, I'd like you to kind of respond.
A group of crazy people, you have.
Could be.
It is a good way of beginning here, because who sets the standards of what is appropriate or inappropriate behavior? In other words, there is a tendency, a very strong tendency in your society, that if you are not following the very strict pattern that that even the majority believe is appropriate, then you are considered out of balance or improper. And so many of you, we're speaking of your society at large, are guiding your behavior not from your perspective of what you are wanting, but from your perspective of what you are not wanting. I'd better do this because I don't want to be considered improper, or I'd better do this because I don't want them to lock me up.
Mm-hmm.
We can see how those who had decided not to be captured by that sort of thing could at that age find themselves in a very happy state of being, and that is really what we are encouraging all of you toward. The subject of this gathering, as you have entitled in your booklet of death, would be, as you have just stated, be better stated as the subject of life, because there is not death, there is only eternal life experience. And yet in this physical format you have very decided beginnings and endings to this physical phase, or to this segment called this life experience. As you are looking toward the ending of your experience, as almost all of you are, there is a very predominant focus that is drawn toward looking toward the end. At a very early age, most of you are encouraged to control what you are doing or wanting or living now based upon what will happen to you after that point. And so almost everything that you are living is influenced by your awareness of this ending place. And that is unfortunate, because it takes your attention away from the blissfulness or deliciousness of the now and puts it out there in a place where you can't do anything about it. All of your power is in your now. And so as you get focused too far down the road upon something, you diffuse your power, you see. And so we would encourage you to think in terms of this life experience as being a part of your overall experience. In other words, life is eternal, and this is a part of it, just as your early years were a part of this life experience, and the years that are coming are a part of this life experience. Try to integrate yourself into the full cycle of things so that you do not feel this point of endedness at the time of leaving this physical body. We must acknowledge that we have noted that the majority of your illness as the people upon your earth comes about because you are confused about the appropriateness of living and dying. You have been so convinced that you are here to prove yourselves worthy of something that you are afraid to leave because you never feel like you've got it finished. And the reason you never feel like you've gotten it finished is because it will never be finished. The reason that there is always this strong feeling of incompletion is because there is not a completion, you see. And so as you decide, it is usually not a conscious decision, more of an unconscious decision, that you are living a life experience that is less than what you want it to be, you begin a natural decline of your physical body because you need an excuse to leave. The decline of your physical apparatus is nothing more than the only way you can logically figure out how to get out of this. Because they've convinced you that it is improper for you to go under any other circumstances. In other words, what do they say if a healthy one dies? What a shock it is. How unusual. What went wrong? Why should he leave but let him get run over by a truck or let his physical apparatus decline from disease, then it is a good thing. Then you all say, oh, now we give him, we allow him his justification for dying. We would like to assist you in getting your focus absolutely off of the subject of death because death does not exist. And upon the subject of life because life is eternal. And then we would like to bring you pointedly to the awareness of where you are right now, where you are fully focused right now. And we are back upon the subject again of doing that which feels good unto you. Now, where are you wanting to go with this?
Okay, let's say that we do want to follow your belief and we don't want our bodies to deteriorate. Yet we see somebody. We see their wrinkles. We see their hair loss. We see their slumped spine. We see that they do have cancer or whatever. Can you go full circle and when you see this, how to pivot, how to think positive aspects, how to bridge the beliefs to where that we get to the point where we actually do want our bodies to not deteriorate?
The way that we would go about that is by beginning with some things that you already know, such as, I am the creator of my experience. It is amusing to us that as we view all of these individual creators, and you see, from our perspective, it is very easy to know that everything you are living, you have attracted. And so we see all of these individual attractors. And what is amusing to us is how these attractors look over at evidence that has been created by others and then somehow superimpose their creation into your life. In other words, an underlying assumption in your question is, because this one is at this age and has wrinkles, then I must have wrinkles when I am at that age. Or because this one now has cancer, then there is great probability that I would have that experience. And what we are wanting you to understand is that since you are individual attractors, no one else's evidence need be a part of your experience unless you look at the evidence so much that it becomes the tar baby that you are engulfed in, you see. By looking for what you are wanting to see, by focusing upon the positive aspects of others, you will not notice the things that you are not wanting to see. But have you noticed that the things that you are already fixated upon are the things that you predominantly see? In other words, you look at another who has all sorts of aspects, some positive and some negative, but do you not find yourself noticing the same sorts of things about almost everyone? And it is not because those same sorts of things are being projected by them. It is because you, as the attention giver to that subject, are attracting it into your experience. The best experience that we have experienced with our friends recently was watching Esther getting up in the morning after working very late at night on a book and walking into her office, intending to sit and work for a bit before the telephone got busy. And she noticed that her mate had preceded her and had moved things around upon her desk. And so, in a sort of negative train of thought, she thought, I wish he would not work at my desk, for there are other desks in the house that he could just as well utilize. Then the next negative thought, by law of attraction that came forth, was, when he works at my desk, he moves my things around. And then the next train of thought was, when he moves my things around, I cannot find them. And so as she sat at her computer, she reached to the left of it for the document she had been working upon and could not find it. And so she went out into the garden, found him in the chicken house, and said, "What have you done with chapter 15? "I did not have it," he said. She said, "It was there when I went to bed. It was not there when I got up. You are the only one that has been there in between. Now, who do you suppose has moved it?" And he said, "Truly, I did not." He is used to this sort of inquisition. And so he just smiled and said, "Do not worry, you will find it. It will turn up." And so as Esther went back into the house, the telephone now was ringing, and she got distracted doing other things. And as she now sat at her computer, she looked down, and there was the document. Right where it had been all along, there was a very small document on top of it, but it was sticking out all around the edges. She could not see beyond the boundaries of her beliefs. And her beliefs said, "I wish he would not work at my desk. When he works at my desk, he moves things around. When he moves things around, I can't find what I want. And so in the knowledge that I can't find what I want when he works at my desk, and when there was proof that he had worked at her desk, it was not possible for her to find what she wanted to find." She had already set herself up for that, you see. And so what we are wanting you to understand is that within each of you exists the probability of perfect health or deadly disease. When in each of you exists the opportunity or probability of perfect health or declining apparatus. All of those probabilities exist. It is really not that it is absent in the one that appears well and really there in the one that appears sick. For as you have said earlier, the reality of it is that it all exists or that none of it exists. You may participate within whatever part of it that you choose. Everyone on your planet could have a disease, and you do not have to have it if you would accept that you are the individual creator. But as you have spent a lifetime believing in contagiousness, heredity, all of these things that connect you one to another, then you use that evidence to put yourself in a position where you do not want to be. Now, this sort of self-talk, acknowledging what you do know, will help you reach into the boundaries that you are not quite so sure about. We've watched Esther regarding the subject of cancer, with many family members who have participated within it, and many of them dead because of it. And so from a very early age, her fear of cancer was very strong. And her acknowledgement from an early age that it is a hereditary thing. Much conversation about it. "Well, what do you expect? Of course she would die of cancer. Both of her parents had cancer," was the conversation, you see. And so, as Esther came into her full awareness that she is a creator of her own experience, she began making statements such as, "I am a healthy being." We agree. But then as she hears a cancer advertisement, or interacts with one who is very frightened and very saddened because they are currently, even temporarily, experiencing this treacherous sounding word, negative emotion wells up in Esther. What does the negative emotion mean? It means that she holds beliefs that are not in harmony with her wanting. As physical creatures, you deceive yourselves. You say, "I am healthy, all is well." But the emotion that you have knows the true block of thought that is within you, see. And so when you feel negative emotion, that is the indicator that you hold beliefs that are not in harmony with your wanting. And so then pivoting, looking for positive aspects, and self-talk is in order. You are literally wanting to desensitize the negative side of these issues to the point that a treacherous subject such as cancer sounds just like the word mustard. Some like it, some don't. Some put it on their hot dogs, some don't, you see. And so, is there something specific you are wanting to bring forth?
Right now, as you're speaking about cancer, I'm thinking of cancer as being more internal. Is it possible that we can change or not attract the physical, the exterior physical, the wrinkles, the change in the posture, the change in the body?
In other words, you are not seeing something internal in the same way as you are seeing something external?
No, I'm seeing those as something different because
You are taking it away from her when she is speaking?
She was through.
She is now. We're wanting to hear this clarification.
No, I do see those as two separate issues, because I can't see cancer when someone says they have it, or when a doctor has diagnosed them as having cancer. I can't see that. I can see wrinkles with my eyes. I can see, so I'm seeing those. I'm hearing your example, but what I'm wondering is, can we also use that on the external basis?
As you say, I seek youthful appearance all of the days of my physical experience. You will go about it in two ways. You will either grow old and look youthful, or you will die young. We're having a little bit of fun with you, but what we are wanting you, all you have to do is make the statement of what you want. I want youthful appearance. I want my youthful vitality to be with me all of the days of this physical experience. I'm wanting to live to be very old and very well, and to remain very beautiful and very vibrant. And as you make that statement, then what happens is you begin to attract that sort of evidence. You begin to meet those who are having that sort of experience. You begin to recognize, you see, you could look at the skin, even if, let us say that you have gone past the point. Let us say that you have wrinkles in places where you are not wanting wrinkles. Look at the part of your body where there is not wrinkle, and identify that your skin is very smooth. And as you focus upon that which is smooth, you will begin to create, or in this case, recreate. It is a matter of giving your attention to what you are wanting. And then you attract that sort of evidence, until suddenly you find yourself surrounded by many others who are as you are wanting to be. Someone said, it is a very nice combination. By the time my face gets wrinkles, my eyes get dim and I cannot see them. And we say, that is another way of going about it, you see. Esther said, I like to get ready in the mirror that doesn't have much light. These mirrors that have great light are very discouraging. And so seek that which makes you... You see, if you have made the decision that what is most important is that I feel good, then you will gravitate toward experiences that will make you feel good. It is the natural process of that. And most pointedly, you must look for what you're wanting to see.
I want to get Abraham to clarify something, just, okay. And I'll give you the mic. My speech teacher, Ben Hanley, always looked like he was in his 20s, even though we all knew he had been teaching at that school for about 30 years. And and so when I left high school, he still looked that age. And then I went back to New Orleans, and I said, do you ever see, to someone years later, do you ever see Ben Hanley? He said, oh yeah, he retired from teaching. And like the week after he retired, suddenly he was 80 years old and just fell all apart, and that was the end of him. They said everything, his whole body, his face changed, his skin changed in like a week or 2 weeks. It just like almost instantly from the time he... Would you elaborate, or can you clarify how he maintained looking so like not changing age-wise for so many years until this retirement point, and then...
He was in a situation where he was predominantly surrounded by those of youthful appearance. In other words, that was his predominant thought. Also, you have had this discussion on many occasions, when you have released your purpose for being, when there is no longer wanting, then the tendency is to allow yourself to think about what you are not wanting. And there is nothing that causes the deterioration of your physical apparatus other than allowance of negative emotion. It is always attention to lack that causes the deterioration of your physical apparatus. Now, all of you have a different idea of what beauty is. Look around your world and look at the different ideas of what that is. And so, if you are one who is looking at others in a critical way, it is very easy for you to see all sorts of things that you don't want, as well as all sorts of things that you do want. We would encourage that for your own state of well-being, you always look for what you are wanting to see, because that will be what is reflected back through your own physical being. You're wanting to speak?
I just wanted to tell Esther that I found the mirror that, like she has in Austin, the mirror that I had this morning, I look so much better than I do in other mirrors.
Indeed.
Why would we not want to age? I wouldn't want to look and live as I did at age 25. I would not trade the experience. But with aging, you look at the people around that are older. I have friends that, they say that they missed their deer this year because they're older. I knew them when they're 60 years ago, old, 20 years ago, and they missed the deer for the same reason. We put too much on aging, I think. Because you have more fun as you get older. You become more relaxed. And think of the tension you went through when you were younger.
It all has to do with whether at any age, whether you are looking at positive or negative aspects of your experience. We're beginning to sound like a broken record, but that is what we're most wanting you to hear. You always have the option for looking for what you're wanting to see or looking for what you are not wanting to see. And the way you feel and what you live will reflect that choice. Do you agree?
Yes, Abraham. I'd like it very much if you would go back to the example that you were giving of Esther and her walking into the office. I'd like for you to go step by step what she could have done. Now, I know that you said that when Esther walked in, she says, oh, he's been in my office.
But that was the place.
That was the first point that she recognized.
Correct.
Now, was there anything else going on, sort of like, well, I don't know that I really want to do this, but I need to do it?
Indeed.
Because, okay.
It is a very long story. In other words, it began the night before as she worked well past her time of rest, trying to meet some deadline from position of lack. Not doing the work out of her wanting to do the work, but doing the work because the consequence said it will not be to the publisher in time, we will miss deadlines. In other words, it was the train of pain. It was from attention to the lack. She was motivated to her action from a place of lack. She went to sleep that night not following the process that we talked about last evening, not setting forth the intent to emerge into the new day refreshed and anew. She awakened and stumbled right back into the day with the same feeling that she had had from the day before. In other words, the big project still looming there in front of her, all of these things to do. And so it was from that negative feeling that now she is stumbling into the office, not glad to be alive, not eager to get into the process, but doing it because it must be done, that sort of thing. All of you have many options for pivoting or many options for choosing positive or negative aspects. It is just that out of habit, most of you follow the pattern that you've already established before, you see. And this book is a very old, very long, very negative topic because almost every day of Esther's life, her mate says, when are we going to do this book? In other words, it is something that by his standards should have been done long ago. And so Esther's attitude toward it is predominantly one of lack. She can never get caught up upon it. Even if she finishes it today, she is still behind because it should have been done long ago, you see. And so...
Okay, a thing that I just recognized fairly recently is I'm very well aware of the should kind of thing that we get going in our life. But then I just realized the ought to, which seems a little different from the should, okay? But it's like...
Not much.
I know.
Not enough to mention.
Right, but it comes in and it's a different vibration.
If you will adopt the attitude that the only thing that really matters is that I feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is what has been taking place within Esther since her decision and since our discussions about emerging into the new day. She has been awakening, pounding on her chest like Tarzan, feeling the exuberance and finding herself drawn to the things that she is really wanting to do. In other words, she is able to release herself from any negative momentum so that every day is a new day. And the days are becoming much more satisfying and much more productive. All of you, regarding all subjects, have hundreds, if not thousands, of opportunities to make those choices. Out of habit, many times you make the choice toward the negative aspect, which only causes your point of pivot to loom bigger. In other words, the negative emotion is stronger before you recognize it. A glorious life experience is lived by one who is good at pivoting, one who is good at stating what they want, which awakens the guidance system, sensitive to the way that you feel, so that you are able to pivot in the early subtle stages, not when something gets very large, you see.
Does this pivoting become automatic? Like, for instance, we're talking about the momentum that gets going, and so it's like you're down the toilet before you know it. Okay. So can you not doesn't the exact opposite
absolutely
that you have the momentum of
absolutely
going
it,
so
it
much
becomes your habit natural. To look for the positive aspect
right.
It becomes your habit to look for what you're wanting to see, which begins that attraction automatically until soon. And it is true, we've watched it with Jerry and Esther, everything in their experience or most everything flows so beautifully and so harmoniously that when something is out of sync, they really feel it, you see.
Yes.
When
yes.
something is on the negative side of it, a very small issue seems like a very large issue and something really worth pivoting upon. Good.
Right. In other words, the things that used to be large don't even exist anymore. It's the subtle ones that come in and
that
feel
is correct.
Large now.
You see, as Esther stumbled into her office feeling the negativity, and then the train caused her to not see what she wanted to see, and then as she went to her mate and said, "Where is it?" Now, if he had been one who was not feeling good about himself and who was feeling defensive as Esther came with her accusatory words, he could have now become part of it. He could have argued with her. He could have said, "Look, I have not been in there. It is your mess that is in there." In other words, it could have... But he was one who had awakened feeling wonderful. He was one who was exuberant about life experience. He was out with his chickens. He was in his garden. Life was perfect. And so as Esther came in, and she was very kind about it, her words were not harsh sounding. It was, "I can't find something and I want it." And so what was exuding from her was negative emotion, and he knew it. Well, as he received her negative emotion, he helped her with the pivot by saying, "Don't worry about it. It always turns up. Did you have a good night's sleep? Let us have something to eat." In other words, his conversation and his words of, "I love you. It is nice to see you out on a day like this." He caused her to feel better, and in her feeling better, the pivot came about more easily. That is the benefit that you have for one another. But it is not the way that it works with most of you. Most of you are so defensive that if somebody comes to you in a bad state, then you defend, you see, because you feel like you are being challenged or that something is wrong with you. When all along, when someone is coming to you and feeling negative emotion, it has much more to do with them and the momentum that is taking place within them than it does with you. And if you can understand that, if you can understand that you are not the target, you are not the one that is being attacked, you have just been swept up in this negative emotion, but you are standing in that clear place of feeling good, then you can. In this case, it is always very easy for Jerry to assist Esther in feeling better, or in Esther assisting Jerry in feeling better, because that is what both of them want more than any other thing, you see.
Well, one of the things, too, though, that I think is seems to be very important right here is to recognize when you start interacting with someone. Of course, Esther and Jerry mates and living in the same household. It sometimes is not apparent to me that when I start interacting with somebody that they're coming from a negative state. I'm talking about the difference between what is said and what is coming from them vibrationally.
If you are wanting to be in harmony and you are, and there is not harmony that is existing, you know it. You always know it,
right.
No matter what they're saying. You feel it. You sense it. But in order for that, you have to be sensual. You have to have turned your senses on. And the way you do it is by making more statements about what you do want. If you get up and have not made any statement about what you want for the day, then you're sort of numb to everything. Things have to get to a pretty exaggerated state before you even notice that things are not going in the direction that you want them. But if you have awakened saying, "Today I really want to feel good," then anything that is not in harmony with you really feeling good, you will know it right away. The other day we were watching Esther. She was feeling agitated, again working upon this great project across the kitchen table, feeling very agitated. She said, "Something is wrong. It is almost as if I can smell toxic things in the house. I think it is the refrigerator," she said. "Unplug it." She is wanting to replace an old refrigerator with a new refrigerator, and so let this be the culprit, you see. And so her mate, knowing that it isn't the refrigerator, but wanting Esther to be happy, unplugged the refrigerator and begrudgingly went into the other room, knowing that it was not the refrigerator, you see. But even after the refrigerator is unplugged, Esther is still sensing this, until eventually, together, they discovered that there was a wire that was smoldering in the wall. Even before the nose could find it, the agitation was there because something was not in harmony with what they are wanting in terms of well-being. Now, this is an exaggerated issue, but it is the same with you. Anytime there is a short circuit in a relationship, whether it is work or personal or whatever, you get a sense of agitation. When you find agitation within you, the only thing to do is to identify again, what do I want? What do I want? What do I want? So that anything that you are not wanting can be ferreted out so that you can either deal with it or so that it can go away. What more?
Okay, I would like something clarified that has bothered me for some time, obviously. But I watched my father die. I had the experience of watching my father die several years ago. And have not had seen anyone die before or since. And he was very quiet, and the death rails had come on, and my aunt was there, and she said, well, he's about to go because those are the death rails.
Oh, meaning?
Meaning that he was quiet, and would be dying within a matter of a minute or 2 minutes. And right at about that moment, he was lying there very quietly with the death rails, and he raised up and started screaming and cursing and shouting for them not to take him, and please don't take him. And there was terror in his eyes, and that went on for a few minutes, and then he died. Now, he was a very good man, and I have stopped believing in heaven and hell, but I want to know what happened after, and all the after-death experiences I have read about and heard about. They see these beautiful lights, and they go out with this wonderful smile. And that was not my experience, and it was triggered in over another death and violent death recently. And all of that I had very triggered in, and I had to deal with it a little bit more. So what does happen? If you go out like that, is your soul miserable for the rest of its life, or what is the transition?
As you are in your physical body, everything that you are experiencing while physical is as a result of the combination of thoughts that you have accumulated from this life experience, and really from this life experience only. In other words, you're not thinking thoughts from past life experience or even from your broader perspective. Everything that you are thinking, all beliefs that you are believing right now in this body, have been accumulated from the arena of this physical experience. Now, the guidance that comes forth in the form of feeling, or even the guidance that is coming forth from Abraham in terms of this interaction, is coming forth from broader perspective, but it is coming forth at the invitation of that which you are living here. In other words, your life here, your thought here, your wanting here, your belief here, is evoking all of that forth. You are the attractor of it. Now, when you are upon the process, as you say, the death rails, is that what you are calling it? When you are in that time of transition between the physical and the non-physical, until you have actually made the transition, you are still thinking and believing in terms of the physical that has been offered. And so the beliefs that you hold are dictating your experience. In other words, just as Esther could not see the papers that were right there on the desk, her reality was they are not there. When someone else looking would say the reality is that they are there. What we are saying to you is that you cannot experience outside the boundaries of your beliefs. And so what your father was experiencing was knowing that he was making the transition, knowing that all decisions, in other words, there was nothing else to be done, no other peace to be made, no other action of compensation that could be offered. In other words, this is it. The jig is up. Here I go. And it was a feeling of absolute unpreparedness because he was still questioning his worthiness of going on to the other side. So much so that he simply did not, from his conscious physical perspective, feel ready to go. And any acknowledgement from the other side was simply making him feel uncomfortable because he was still in his physicalness feeling strong lack of that. Then what happened is, in the moment that the physical focus was withdrawn from the physical apparatus, he donned his broader perspective. And his broader perspective, while it still for a little while included the memory of this physical experience, his broader perspective was one, oh, this is where I'm wanting to be. And it was an absolute immediate transition into the glorious, non-physical, broader perspective. And his response was something like, oh, that wasn't such a big deal. In other words, all of that straining and resisting and worrying. His next acknowledgement was, if I had known it was going to be like this, I would have done it a hell of a lot sooner. If you will excuse the term, to that which does not exist. You are following? You are feeling complete about it, or you're wanting to take it a little bit further? Re-emerging with the non-physical and non-physical awareness, then he experienced that absolute ecstasy. You see, any time you are moving into something that is unknown, have you ever walked into a dark room where you do not know what is around the corner? Do you not always find yourself feeling a little bit of trepidation? Whenever you are walking into what you have not already figured out, you always feel uncomfortable. What we are wanting to accomplish as we are here together in this format, as through the format of your physical life experience and with our tutorage a bit, we are wanting you to acknowledge that there are no real unknowns. As you understand the laws of the universe, then the details might be unknown, but you never have anything frightening or scary. You understand, you begin to say things and really know things like, under any and all conditions, I will be all right. Whether I remain in this physical body or whether I do not, it will be a glorious experience. Whether I go here or whether I go there, it will be a glorious experience. You stop trying to consciously orchestrate the universe when it is not possible. And you allow the laws of the universe to orchestrate it, while you just fall into harmony with the laws of the universe, you see. Good.
It seems like that I read in Seth, I believe it was Seth, about when we go from the physical to the non-physical, that at first we will see what we expect to see.
Always. It can be no other way.
Okay, that's what was a little confusing from what you just said, that immediately when he went to the non-physical, he said, this is great. And I was more thinking that maybe what he saw, both on the physical side and just as he went to the non-physical, was if he believed there was a devil, he saw it for a while until he went through some kind of transition.
Oh, you have to understand that your wanting always reigns supreme. And so in the immediate transition, while he was still physically focused, that was certainly his experience. But his powerful wanting to be in the place that he considered goodness was so strong that that was his media experience. It is not possible for us to put everyone in the same kettle. We were speaking specifically of this situation, you see.
So all of us will have a different experience.
All of you will have the experience that you're anticipating.
Good. One off the subject here. How is the book coming?
It is nearly complete, and it is magnificent, and all of you are a part of it.
And one curiosity, if Esther is having trouble banging this out in the physical, I've always wondered why you don't cut out the middle woman and you start sit down at the computer and bang this out quickly, because then there will be no revisions and there will be no mistakes, and Esther will be sitting there just being full of energy and energy.
That is really what the process is. Esther puts herself at the typewriter, and we are preparing it. The actual delivery of the book is very easy. It is the putting it into the physical format that is taking the detailed time.
Also, when Esther is typing, she's actually in... She brings you forth to do the typing?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's what I didn't understand.
Let us explain to you a little bit. As Esther sits at the typewriter, we are offering her blocks of thought. She's translating it onto the page. And that part comes very easily. Now what is happening is we are going back through and inserting and editing, which requires that she give it her conscious awareness, and that she then release and allow us. And that is the part that is difficult for her. It is easy for her to sit here and allow us to speak through her. The energy flows very powerfully. It is the transcending back and forth between the consciousness and the unconsciousness that is more difficult.
We have about 4 minutes.
Is it possible to leave the physical experience without the deterioration or the destruction or the death of the physical body? In other words, I'm asking, what about ascending death?
All that is required is that you say, I've enjoyed this very much, and now what I am seeking is the non-physical. In other words, if you are looking at what you are wanting, you can release the physical apparatus instantly.
Well, what happens to the physical apparatus? Don't you go, you're releasing it, don't you still have to experience the releasing of the physical? Or is there a way to transcend that?
It is a withdrawing from the physical. The physical apparatus no longer is an issue. Then what happens to it is that it becomes a part of all that is here. In other words, it disintegrates. But at that point, there is no value of it for you. The point that we are wanting to make, and it is a very important point, perhaps the most important point of this topic, most of you die from a position of lack. You are focused upon what you do not want, sickness or unhappy life experience, and so from this place of lack you have your death experience, in which case there is a little more transition that must be made before you find your happy positive balance. What you were describing is simply making a new decision. What I'm seeking now is something different from this, rather than being motivated. In other words, if your body gets sick enough or old enough or tired enough, then finally when things are bad enough, then you say enough. And that is when you leave. And we say it doesn't have to be that way. Just make a new decision. I've had all that I'm wanting and off I go. And isn't it a glorious transition? Of course, the rest of them will stand around moaning and mourning and complaining, but then that is none of their business, is it? You're wanting to speak? Let us go to the very back.
2 minutes.
I don't know if there's really time for this, but could you briefly address the subject of senility? My understanding from some different things I've read that seem to kind of make some sense is that when people reach a certain age and they start, you know, losing their memory and their children again, and
most of it is caused from overwhelmment. They are trying to consider so many things at once that they simply find themselves bogged down and overwhelmed by it, and so they just start a process of withdrawing. They take their attention from that which causes them pain and give their attention to something that gives them peace. And they're really in a much better place than any of you are giving them credit.
So it's a preparatory type of
experience. It is, that sort of thing. This is a very broad subject.
Some of it can go on for years, right, with some people?
And the reason that it goes on for years is because they, at the same time that they are withdrawing from the overwhelmment, are afraid of the other alternative. They are afraid of dying, and so they do not allow that either. And so they hold themselves in a sort of limbo.
Tired of living and scared of dying.
That would make a very good song.
You have about one more minute.
What we are wanting you to consider regarding the subject of death is that it does not exist. What we would like you to do is give your attention to the full experience of life. And the best way to go about that is to identify that the only thing that is really important is that I feel good. And as you give your attention to that, not only will you have a glorious experience as you are focused in your now, but even your transition from the now into that which is next will be a glorious transition with no trepidation. Do not worry about those who are transcending from the physical into the non-physical. In every case, even though there may be some discomfort in the beginning, once they are around that dark corner and in the full lighted room, they are doing just fine, you see. We've enjoyed very much this interaction. What about you?
Yes.
We are complete.
This is the end of Abraham Hicks' dialogue on death and deterioration. If you'd like a broader overview of our works, you can visit our website at www.abraham-hicks.com, or you can contact us for catalogs or additional information at our telephone 830-755-2299, or write to us, Post Office Box 690070, San Antonio, Texas 78269.